Agility, what is agility? We've got it here, punch a big half. The five sense objects. Lingam, the subtle body. Three Greek, influenced by the three mothers. Trogasha, 16. Expanded into 16, sorry. Prabhupada explains it here. Oh, it's also in the translation. Five sense objects. The five sense organs. The five knowledge-acquiring senses. And the mind. Are the 16 material expansions. So the five sense objects, the objects of the senses. Smell. Smell comes from the earth.
Sight.
There's taste. Which comes from water. Taste. Then form. Which is fire. And then touch, which comes from air.
Wow.
You can feel it. Because we go backwards, we go from gross to subtle. And then sound. And of course, each one of those has its sense. So the nose smells, the tongue tastes, the eyes see the form, the skin feels the sensation of touch, and the ears hear the sound. And then we have the active, Prabhupada says here, the sense organs. The active, we have the Gyanendriya and the Karmendriya, the knowledge acquiring, and then the active senses, the legs, the hands, the tongue, the genitals, the anus, so sense organs. So these all combine together. The 15 combine together to create basically the vehicle within which we interact with whatever we do, with the material energy. It's the vehicle that covers the living entity, the jiva. Esha Chaitanaya Yukta, mixed up, living entity, Chaitanaya. Chaitanaya. It's like Chaitanya. Chaitanya means the living force. The living force. That's the living entity. That's us. The five knowledge acquiring senses, the five sense organs, the five sense object, and the mind. The 16 material expansions. These combine with the living entity and are influenced by the three modes of material nature. So Living energy, these gross material elements, and the lingam, the subtle body, influenced by the three modes of material nature. And these can all be analysed. All of this basic information within the Bhagavad Gita, basically, you know, the basic information. What is the covering? What is the identity? And the real identity is, properly explained, see, we're actually a part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Buddha Sanatmaha. The living entity is a part of Krishna, a fragmental part. We are equal in quality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In quantity, we are infinitesimal. But in quality, we are one with God. That's pretty amazing. But due to the influence of the modes of material nature and the experience of the 16 material expansions, we think we're a product of material energy, not a spiritual entity. This is our philosophy. This inconceivable oneness and difference. So on the one hand, you know, if you pinch your leg, right? Do you feel it? You feel it? If you're not feeling it, you're not pinching hard enough. And so, you know, there's a strong identification with the body. Very strong, but at the same time, we see that from it intellectually, we know that we're not the body. We can identify it as something different from the body. But yet, if somebody comes and punches us, and we feel it. So it's this material energy is extremely powerful, and that's why we struggle with it. Basically, on the one hand, you know, our yearning is to know ourselves, to know who we are. And which is why we have to study, in Isha Upanishad as mentioned, we study science and nescience. Right? We study the spiritual science, but we also study the material science, to know both. We have to know both. And so the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam gives us this basic information. Here's how the machinery, you know, what is it? Yantra Yuhani Mayaya. The body is like a machine. And we're separate from it. We can observe the function of the body. We can observe the function of the mind. We can observe the function of the senses. And see that we're separate from it, but yet also influenced by it. Especially according to the modes of material nature. So, you know, we can be blithely walking down the street, you know, meditating on our spiritual identity and feeling blissful, right? And then, you know, we, just like yesterday, we were driving, Sri Chaitanya and I were driving back from Werribee, and this Ferrari came roaring by and then passed us and took off. Right? So, you know, boing! I don't know if that's Sri Chaitanya, but certainly me, I'm identified with my money car. And somebody else's money car. Oh, look, there he goes. But the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literature, in fact, the cream of the Vedic literature teaches us the essence. The essence is, you know, without the driver in the car, it won't go. Without a spirit soul within the body,
The body doesn't function. So what's more important? And our desire and our urge is to understand who we are. You know, not from the material, physical perspective, but from the spiritual perspective. And from the spiritual perspective, how the material energy influences us. So the Bhagavatam gives us this information. So that we can understand it and dissect it. You know, this is part of our intellectual pursuit, is to identify the spiritual essence. This what is it? The unsa, the part that's coming from, well, actually everything's coming from Krishna, but we want to get to the essence, that is, the essence of our identity, which is the jiva, or the chetanaya, right? The living entity, the conscious living entity. But the material energy is very powerful, according to the knowledge of material nature, will be influenced in the thinking in particular ways. In the mode of ignorance, the identification is very much with the body. In the mode of passion, it's identifying with the body, but more in what we do. And in a higher or more elevated understanding of things, a higher level of civilization is what we think. What we do on the subtle, is there any tissues up there? My nose is very cold this morning. Well, colder than. What are you supposed to do with that? We buy the cheapest tissues because it doesn't do a very good job, especially when you have a big nose like me. These are one-use tissues. According to the influence of the modes of material nature, we will act and think, you know, the subtle and the gross will be influenced in particular ways. So in the mode of ignorance, what have we got? Indolence, sleep, intoxication, dull. Gross. In the mode of passion, we see activity, but activity inspired by transgratification, basically. Mode of passion means strong desires exhibited or manifest in material activity, which ultimately leads to distress. There's the acquisition, there's the acquiring of money, of influence, of power, of fame. This is mode of passion, push to get these things. But then when you get them, what do you realize? I got the Ferrari, but it's still just a car. It doesn't make you happy. It'll break down in due course of time. So you know, the acquisition of material, the mode of passion. Now, this is conception, I think misconception of some of the devotees, that if you're very active, then you're in mode of passion. But you know, if we look at sort of Prabhupada's life, he was very active. Right? He established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, 108 temples. You know, you don't do that, you know, just sitting around chanting Hare Krishna all day long. Of course, the impetus, Prabhupada's impetus was not to gain material wealth or material possessions or material influence, but a man is inspired to get, and he's very active. So the Prabhupada had to be very active to do what he did. Right? So the motive, goodness, is also characterized by action. But the impetus or the cause is not the mode of passion, but it is the mode of goodness. In fact, even higher than the mode of goodness is the mode of Shuddhasattva. Or so you know, we shouldn't think, oh, here's a converted class for sacrifice, the mode of passion. Huh? If that were the case, then we would label Srila Prabhupada as being the mode of passion. But no. Mode of goodness doesn't mean we just sit around and meditate all day long. Of course, meditation is there. But a devotee is also very active. Very active. Actively, Srila Prabhupada was extremely active in so-called material affairs, but also in, and look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur as an example. Active in his so-called material affairs, but also writing books, performing kirtan, giving lectures, building temples. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, isn't it? He's quoted as saying, have you measured the success of a devotee by how many books he distributed, by how many devotees he's made, by how many temples he's opened? Right? So, extremely active. So, even a person in the mode of goodness is productive. Of course, the devotee's activities are beyond the modes of material nature, actually on the transcendental platform, but again, still active. Like Abhilesh Maharaj, Karo Hare Mandira Vajna Tishu. What did he do? He went to the temple. And what did he do when he got to the temple? He cleaned it. Very important. Very important. Because, you know, when people come into a temple, they shouldn't see dirt. They shouldn't see dirt anywhere. It should be sparkling, spotlessly clean. That's the mode of goodness. Keeping things clean is a mode of goodness. Satta. There's knowledge, there's cleanliness, there's steadiness, fortitude, strength, there's duty, determination. There's what's the word for patience? Same as kind of the same. Patience, these are qualities of the mode of goodness. And especially it sees these qualities in the character of the devotee. Samo Dhamasa Bhaso Cham Chantir. Tolerant. Is it Chantir?
Yes.
Chantir Arjavam. Simplicity. Simple. Eva, thus, also. Jnana, learning. This is a symptom of knowledge, of goodness. Learning. And, you know, the learning is, the material world is a tough place. The material world is a tough place. Even though, you know, sometimes what happens to the devotees, we become so happy with our practice of Krishna consciousness. As the morning program, we walk out of the temporary and we feel like Superman. Everything's great. But when we face the reality of the children, we're like, what happened? Everything was great when I was in the temple room. Now I come out, I've got to do some service. I've got to do something. And there's always a challenge, there's always a problem, there's always something going on. Which is what Prabhupada mentions here. Krishna mentions actually. What is it? Anudarshanam. Our darshan of the material world is Jantamriti Jaradiyati. Dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Dukkha dosha. 14. The material world is 14. We like to be in a spiritual world where every word is a song, every step is a dance. When the material world is designed, it's like a wheel clamp. And then you can't do anything. Even if you want to. You want to sing and dance, but we're locked in. Just now we're locked in. We're locked in. Our natural inclination is to be free. I want to be free. Because that's also the foolish materialist thinks he's free also. Yet still bound up. Of course, that's the reality. The reality, even for the spiritualists, the transcendentalists, is that we are bound up. Prakriti stan karshati. Mana shashtanindriyani. Struggling with the mind and the senses. Prakriti stani karshati. Struggling very hard. So, we are very fortunate that we can experience when we chant Hare Krishna, when we're here in Bhagavatam, when we're worshipping the deity, when we're honoring Prasadam. We feel the effects of prema. And with prema comes the feeling of liberation. Right? I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul. I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm naturally ecstatic. But we're still in the conditioned state, we still have to work within the confines of material existence. And so there's still that struggle. There's that sense of what do we call it? That sense of exhilaration. What's that called? What do we call it? Ecstasy. Ecstasy. Ananda punibadanam pratipadam punam amrita svaradanam. That nectar, amrita, which we're always anxious. We're always anxious because, you know, as spiritual practitioners, that's how we get our higher taste. That's why we're able to do what we do, because we're able to connect. This is the beauty, the power of sankirtan and the power of bhakti, devotional service, is that we experience our natural condition as a spiritual being. And when we experience that, that's what we relish that. We enjoy it. We really enjoy this. What is it? Anandamaya Vyasat. Well, because we're part and parcel of Krishna, we also like to enjoy it. But The material world is designed in such a way so we have to suffer. To remind us, you're in the wrong place. Which is why the association of the devotees is the most important thing. Or shall we, because, you know, there's many most important things. It was a little bit ordinary sometimes, but when I first became a devotee, I was looking for the key. Where's the key? There's something magic. Where is it? That just opens up the door to the Vaikuntha. But it is one of the most important is the association of the devotees, because in the association of the devotees we experience that prema bhakti, and that's very attractive. That's the nectar. That's where the nectar comes from. And it's the pratyaksavagamandanya susukam kartam abhyayam. It's that feeling of happiness and satisfaction, even though we're in the material world, we have to deal with the material existence and the interplay of the three modes of material nature. Still, in the association of devotees, we get that connection to Krishna, and we experience that feeling of ananda. Buddhi varadhanam, pati pratam purnam, asamritas varadhanam. The nectar for which we're always anxious. That feeling of exhilaration after the Bhagavatam class, just before breakfast. There's no other experience like it. We feel liberated. And that then takes us beyond the 16 elements, takes us beyond the mind, takes us to that point of spiritual identification, spiritual realization. That's why it is the perfection of religion, because it gives direct perception of the self. And that experience is there, and as we're purified by the process of bhakti, then we're able to consistently meditate on our spiritual identity and that separateness from the material world, that disconnect. There's the connection where we feel the pain and the struggle and the material modes of material nature pulling and pushing and so that's why the association of devotees. Association is so important. Which strikes me all the time. Whenever I think about the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, for me, Dhritarashtra was asking the question, what did they do? What did they do? Guruvata. What did they do? And why was he worried about what did they do? They went there to have a fight. Well, here this problem makes a point. They went there to fight. So what are they going to do? You know, the acharya say, he sat down to have breakfast. What did he do? What do you do when you sit down to have breakfast? You eat. So you go to have a fight. What are you going to do? You go to fight. But he was concerned about the place. It was a sacred place. And he was concerned also about the influence of the Pandavas, because they were devotees. Right? They were devotees. And he was worried, they might decide to, you know, pack up their weapons and go home and live, you know, peacefully together. That was his big concern. They might come to some agreement. So he was concerned about the association, right? The power of the association of the devotees was a worry for Triraj. Because he knew, you know, he kind of knew that what they were doing was wrong also. You know, to transcend these 16 elements, we need the association of the devotees. Because in the association of the devotees, we're in that culture of wanting to understand who am I? You know, how does material energy work? Of course, Bhagavatam's explaining it here for us. How do the minds of material nature work? They agitate everything in such a way so that we're forced to act. Which is why Arjuna asks Krishna, you know, how come sometimes I'm forced to act even though I know I'm not doing the right thing? Because of the minds of material nature that we acquire over so many lifetimes, we're forced to act in particular ways. And why the association of the devotees and the process of bhakti is so important, because it regulates us into action that transcends the urges and the pushings. And otherwise we're going to be influenced by the mode of ignorance, by the mode of passion, by the mode of goodness. Even the mode of goodness itself has a blinding effect if it's not properly engaged. Right? And even the modes of material nature are purified by the engagement in the sadhana process and the regulated principles of bhakti. So, you know, sleep is usually considered, you know, a product of ignorance, but still we use sleep. Right? Try staying awake 24 hours in a day. What happens? You go crazy. Well, you can't think straight. You can't even tie up your shoelaces. Without sleep. So sleep ordinarily, you know, so even, you know, we use the material energy in a regulated way in order to use that to harness the talents or the influences that we have, right? The pushes. So we engage, that's what the expert spiritual teacher, the spiritual master, identifies the characteristics or how a person is being influenced by the most material nature, and then engages those in a positive way in the process of bhakti, so that by that connection with devotional service, the natural propensities, they've been acquired over many lifetimes, can then be summoned, can be purified by the practice of regulated devotional service. And why in due course of time we really have to engage people according to their nature. Because otherwise they will do it anyway. We'll do it anyway. So, you know, good to find out what a person is good at, then we get them to do it. We encourage, you know, and find the right service so that it's dovetailed, Prabhupada would say, dovetailed in Krishna consciousness, in devotional service. So yes, we will struggle always with the material energy. It's designed that, what is it, Durga? The material energy is the abode of Durga, which means tough going. Durga, tough going. And why we should appreciate, why we appreciate the association of the devotees. And what should Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada's great effort and sacrifice in giving us his association, and that association through the association of his disciples, of all of the devotees. Because that's the key by which we're able to unlock this puzzle, this mystery of the senses, the mind, the working senses, the sense objects. Okay, does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points?
I'll ask a question.
Give him the mic. Give the man the mic.
No batteries inside.
Okay. Speak without the mic, because the battery's flat. Yeah. Speak loudly. Here. I'll point the microphone in your direction. For the audience. Very good.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
So, before you were talking about in the moments of passion, people are driven by different material desires. And obviously in the mode of pure goodness, people are driven to serve Krishna.
Yes.
So what is the drive for someone in the mode of goodness?
Mode of goodness is the acquisition of knowledge, of learning, of understanding things in the proper context. The qualities of the mode of goodness are exemplified by the Brahma in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Samal, tolerance, determination, samal damasta paso cham, cleanliness, sense control, equanimity, treating people equally, right? Chantir, tolerance. Simplicity, living a simple, ordered, structured lifestyle. With the aim of cultivating jnana, knowledge, right? And vijnana, realization. Because it's one thing to have knowledge, right? You know, you can recite your times tables. You know what I mean by the times tables? One times one is one times two is two, one times three is three. Did you do times tables at school? Do you remember them? Yeah, of course you remember them. Huh? But when do you really learn how to count? When you really learn how to count, when you've got money in your pocket. That's when your time tables all comes into play, when you try to work out how many crowns will I get for my sixpence. This is how I learn. This is where I really learn how to count. Was when I had to put it, when you have to put it in practice. Right? Just like you know, some of the children, there's a process of learning where you get the children to recite 20 verses from the Bhagavad Gita. Right? They know 20 verses from the Bhagavad Gita, they can recite them. But if you ask them, what does that mean? Right? And of course, the children hate that kind of learning, you know. Just rote. I mean, it does, it has. But you know, you really have to put some of that Mandarita in practice to really know the verse, to really know it. To know the Bhagavad Gita, you've got to put it into practice. You can theoretically know, recite, you know, repeat a purport from the Bhagavad Gita. But if you're not able to actually, if you're not able to put it into practice, if you're not putting it into practice, then what is it? It's just it's learning. But vigyana, realize knowledge, realize understanding. Of course, it's not that we don't study slokas. We do. But we have to make it fun for the kids, and we have to make it so that they know what they're. It needs to be taught in a way so that it's realized, as well as realized and internalized. So, mode of goodness means the cultivation of, or the manifestation of these qualities. And the impetus is learning, knowledge. Right? Because from learning comes understanding. It becomes an understanding of how to deal. And it, with it comes peacefulness, happiness. Peacefulness and happiness. Whereas mode of passion is what?
Distress.
Gotta do it, man. Gotta do it, gotta do it. And keep doing it until you explode. Right? You die of a heart attack. You push, push, push. Whereas the impetus for a person in mode of goodness, push, but for a higher purpose. Right? And even for the devotee, you see, very active, also somewhat driven. But what's the drive? Please my spiritual master. Please Krishna. Understand what my purpose is. My purpose, you know, I'm a servant. Prabhupada mentioned how he would pay his obeisances to his spiritual master, and his spiritual master would say, Dasasmi, you know, I am your servant. Right? Which is, you know, which is a response. Natural response from the devotee is, how can I serve you? What would you like me to do? You know, the devotees would get, we do, we get very enthused when somebody chants Hare Krishna and comes with the association of the devotees, and then what do they, and then they say, how can I help? You know, how can I serve? Well, this is it, you know, so, well, I've got a real bhakta here. Well, this guy's a real bhakta. Why is that? Because he just said, what do you want me to do? And the devotees say, oh, do this, do that, now he just goes and does it. They go, wow! This guy's a real bhakta. Huh? That's inspiring, because that's the quality of a devotee. Even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is a very elevated devotee, obviously. Right? Very learned, very disciplined. You know, before he started his preaching mission, he was like Haridas Thakur in Mayapur. No? Just chanting. So, you know, so deeply absorbed in Nam Seva, Nam Ruchi, right? Has to be. We chant 16 hours and then, boy, made it. Give me something to do. I'm going to go do something. This is actually my passion. Mode of goodness is just, you can sit and chant Hare Krishna. Just pull that on. So, you know, the impetus of the devotee is basically, does us mean I'm a servant? What would you like me to do?
Because we're in lockdown.
We're in lockdown, so we want to stay locked down.
No, no, we don't want to stay locked down at all. But it's probably wiser to be a little restrained till we can work out what we do next. Our main business is to preach. That's our... and to be effective in that preaching. And so that's why our behaviour, the behaviour is the measure of learning, right? Yeah. Is the what we do is the measure of actual learning. The character, the qualities, the character it receives, the mood of the devotee is the measure of learning the behaviour, right? Mahajanajanika is that verse that ends with one Mahajanajanika Tatsapanta. And it mentions basically the learning of great saintly persons the behaviour of the Mahajans, of the saintly persons, is the envelope of learning. And this time it's a bit of a test. How we're going to open up our temples, how we're going to preach, and at the same time manage the risks of the current situation. And there are many people now who are frustrated. This is all a big hoax. They're just trying to control us. And yes, it is. We know the material world is a big hoax. Yes, it is. But at the same time, we need to manage the risks. We've been very fortunate in our communities. Certainly in Australia, we've been very, very fortunate. That's why there's you don't see many people with the COVID-19 symptoms, right? So they're doing arts or those. But go and live in the devotee community in London. And, devotees are dead. Left their bodies because of this disease. So it's a bit of an insult, actually, to us all being aged. Can't tell that the people who died in London, even in our community. So we want to manage things. We want to manage things nicely. Because, the question I get, every time the government makes an announcement, right, then 2 days later I get a telephone call. When's the temple going to be open? Can I come and do some services? Is it interesting? There's one devotee whose name I might mention, Pestering Chinch River. When can I come and do my service? You've got to let me come and do my service. I've got to come and see the deities. Well, by the mercy of Bhajaraj and the other devotees, you get to see Radhabala every day at 7 o'clock in the morning, right? But for now, we need to, we've got to manage our affairs in such a way so we minimise the risk, the very low risk, but we still need to keep that low. So, our physical distancing, we call it social distancing, but I don't know why, because actually it's physical distancing. That's what we're doing. We're giving space between ourselves. And, the more space we have and the less people we're interacting with, the less chance we have of contracting the virus. And I read something very interesting this morning. You know how much virus there actually is on Earth at the moment? There's less than 1 gram. If you put all the virus together and play it. It's nothing. Right? Which is why people are going to say, oh, this is a big punch. Except if you get it. Then it's not a hoax, you know, and if you're wrong, it's, you know, we have friends who are down no longer because of the virus. And it was because the birdies didn't, you know, should be done in the manner, the temple president, much loved the birdie, had departed, and everybody went to the funeral. They were hugging, and one of the ladies had the virus. And he passed it then all around to everybody. That's why the proximity is important to keep. So, you know, for some time we're going to have to manage now, keep the distance. Don't stand too close to me. Keep your distance. That protects all of us. Right? And you know, if you go to time, and that's why even, you know, having kirtan in the temple with lots of people, probably not a good idea. I was reading an article the other day about minimizing risk, and they gave an example of a choir. There were 64 people or so many people in the choir. One person had the virus and 50% pretty much of the choir ended up with the virus. Why? Because they're in a confined space, breathing the same air, and around it goes. So, you know, for some time, we're probably going to want to keep. Even though, now, what's our natural propensity? We've got to go and keep. We've got to have a kirtan time. Right?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Come on, you're not the body. What are you worried about? Krishna will protect you. Right? What is it? Kunteya pratijami hiname bhakta pranashati. The devotee never perishes. Sure, the devotee doesn't, but watch out, you've got to look after his body as well. Right? So we need to design our spaces. And for the moment, religious places of public worship are not open still. When they are, we then need to consider what will be our, and for how long will we manage things to reduce the risk. Maybe a low risk, but even still we need to keep it healthy. Conservative, yes, but safe, yes. No, nothing wrong with that. So I kind of morphed there a little bit. But I think it's a message, you know, that we need to think about. We could open our restaurants now. I mean, there's nobody in the city. We have to get everybody back into the city. And you know, Victoria is one of the most conservative states in Australia. Not, you know, everybody wears black. Right, go to Brisbane, where the sun shines, and what have you got? You've got tropical shirts and shorts, stubbies and thongs. Is how people dress. But come to Melbourne, how do people dress in Melbourne? It's like men in black everywhere. Very conservative. And so, you know, it's going to take time for us to gradually open, get the restaurants back up and running, and we'll need customers and all that, so it's going to take time. But then, you know, it's conceivable that South Australia, WA, a couple of the other states, they haven't had any new cases of the virus for quite a few days now. The incidence of New South Wales and Victoria, where we have the bigger population, the largest populations in Australia, There are a few cases, but very few say. And so it's not inconceivable that in a few months' time there will be no cases, right? And we'll all forget. Then we'll go back to our polluting, you know, ways again. We'll bring everything back to normal. At the moment, you know, you can look in the sky and it looks blue. It's like, wow, this is just so amazing. Right? The Jamuna and the Ganga, you can see the bottom of the river.
No.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's just amazing how kind Bhumi, you know, is to us. In that we go, we run around a place that just completely, you know, pollute, poop on everything. That's what we do. That's what human beings do. But now, because we've kind of locked the animals starting to come out, it's like, wow, we've got our space back again. The human beings finally decided to get, you know, sane. But what will happen? Unfortunately, you know, we'll say, oh, wow, this is really good. But then we'll just go back to normal, so-called normal, just pollute the place again. Now we wonder, oh, why are we having all these problems? But anyway, what to do? In one sense, you know, there are some very positive things that have come from this situation. But everybody's itching, you know, some other passage pushing everybody around. Come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. Let's go out and pollute. Because that's what happens. Our minor passion creates distress. Whereas the mother goodness, things are clean, things are peaceful. The mind and the senses are under control. We're not driven to enjoy and then enjoy man's pollute. Okay, Manarashina Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.